Hey guys, we're the Hard Time Strongman Podcast, cheering up a bear class of man, and I have one question for you. What should you, the average gray squirrel, and the IRA all have in common? You should be able to hide your nuts. Today we're talking about caches and caching out of the Special Forces Operational Techniques FM, out of our own twisted minds. Today we're talking about how and where to hide your stuff. Because, yeah. You know, maybe you'll have to. I mean, for a rainy day, you know, why did Granddad bury, you know, that Alice pack with a broken down AK in the backyard? You never know. A rainy day. Exactly. So today we're going over the ins and outs of caching from TC31-29, except for not in Army speak, because I don't know who publishes these things or who did publish it, but they were terrible. And it took me in order to go through this and to make any real sense of it. So it will be in traditional Hard Time Strongman fashion. If you want all the nitty gritty, we'll leave all of our references in the description, all our references in our show notes that we'll post up to our Patreon. But buckle up, enjoy the ride. I was gonna say, normally this is the part where you talk. I really can't give a better segue than that.
No, that was a good intro. That was a good intro. I just don't know how to follow that up. That was impressive. I'm not gonna lie.
Thank you. I was channeling my inner Rogan there.
That was great. I like it. No, I like it.
Oh. So why? Why hide your nuts?
Yeah.
What do you need to think about?
Yeah. When we're talking, why would you really need to hide something? So my mind from an operational standpoint goes to, I mean, you're doing a long recon. You're carrying a backpack on your back, or you're carrying a rucksack on your back. It's heavy. You need to get into an area where speed and maneuverability is going to be key. And you're going to be able to go in there, do what you need to do, and then exfil. You need to have your ruck somewhere nearby, but you don't need all the stuff that's in it. So this is where caching comes into play. At least from that standpoint.
There's all sorts of reasons, right? There's all sorts of reasons.
Yeah, there's a lot.
So, like you said, you can't carry everything on your person. You can't throw everything in a vehicle. You can't keep everything at home.
It's right? A lot.
So if you're working towards, you know, just general preparedness, you're going to have to keep things in, you know, off your person outside of your immediate area. And basically all caching is hiding that equipment, hiding that material, all that stuff in a safe place so that you can use it later. I mean, so pop culture, right? So John Wick. Okay. First movie.
Oh yeah.
He hid a crap ton of gold coins, you know, his gold ticket in, you know, back into his old ways. He hid a gun, all sorts of different stuff underneath a cement slab in his basement. John Wick 2, he, you know, hid various weapons along his projected route through the tunnels. Okay. You know, what else? I mean, think of any movie, any book. So Jason Bourne in, what was it, The Bourne Identity, had a bunch of different passports, IDs, money, a handgun, and a safety deposit box that he might have to use later. And
right. And in actually recent history, I would say within the last 50 or so years, we mentioned it before in the intro, the IRA are notorious for having buried supplies and caches of weapons, money. I've heard rumors of drugs.
Perfect example.
Underground.
In Fry the Brain, one of the case studies that the author goes over is an IRA attack on a convoy. Okay. But what the IRA did was I don't know if they buried it or they just hid it, a cache of weapons in a barn that had already been swept through, you know, by the occupying force, right? Swept through initially. They went after the security sweep went through, dug all that crap up, and used it in the barn that they already searched.
Ooh.
I mean, and to devastating effect. So imagine an attack coming when you think you're secure. When you're like, oh, no, I checked that. We're good. Why? Yeah, I mean, huge effect. So like, think about any time that you hide a spare key on your car. I mean, just the, you know, we overthink this stuff, but it's so simple. You know, people have been doing it for ages, right? It's a rainy day. So yep. You put stuff away, and there's always that measure of risk that it'll be discovered or shorter or whatever, but we do it anyways. You know, it's such a simple concept.
Right. And just like the IRA with that barn, well, I mean, to expound on the IRA, the joke is that they have so many hidden caches in and around Ireland that they have forgotten where most of them are over the years.
What a vibe.
I know, right?
I wish I had that many guns that I forgot where I put them. What a great problem to have.
Working on it. But anyway,
we'll get there.
Much like the IRA, if you're going to hide a cache, you got to be smart about it. That's where site selection comes into play. And when you're doing this, you need to have a criteria in your mind of, you know, the ideal hiding spot for this stuff. You know, can the site be located by simple instructions that are just so dummy proof that someone who has never visited this location? Yeah.
Completely. Well, so you can't assume that you're going to be the one digging up your cache.
Right.
You know, what if you have to pass that task off to somebody else? Right. So you can't be like a national treasure, you know, wild goose chase. You know, it has to be, like you said, unmistakably clear. There has to, you know, you have to have at least two ways to get there and two ways to leave. So having a primary and an alternate site, or a primary and alternate route. And you have to think, can you emplace this and can you recover it in all seasons, in all weathers? Because you don't get to choose when your rainy day is.
That's why we call it a rainy day, tongue in cheek.
Yeah. And then just some other things to think about when you're laying this cache, right? So you have to think about, you know, your potential enemy or, you know, local population, you know, randoms or friendlies. You know, what are the people around your cache going to do? Right?
Right.
So if you find an abandoned apartment complex, right? And you're like, oh, dude, that's the spot. And then it starts getting renovated.
Oh, God. That might be an issue.
You know?
That's the worst.
Or that same apartment complex, and then, you know, the enemy takes that up as a freaking CP. It's like, oh, well, I can't use that anymore, you know? So,
or even worse, they demo the building.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. I mean, so is the spot that's too popular? Is it a part of key terrain? Because that's going to be terrible, right? You know, you have to think all these things through. But something that can help with that. So, oh, go for it.
I was going to say, like, even along those lines, think about if you're trying to bury something, say, in the middle of a field, like, well, does that field get, like, actively plowed, planted? I mean,
yeah.
Is it near, like, an area that's being developed? Because the field could very quickly become a parking lot.
Yeah. Or you're like, oh, man, I'm going to put it in that grove of trees. And then that grove of trees doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah.
You know?
A natural disaster or man-made happening. Yep. You are screwed.
Yeah. But things that can help kind of mitigate that. So you need to do a good preliminary reconnaissance of the site that you're playing to use as your cache, right? So ideally, if you had, you know, a good, you know, enough resources, enough time beforehand, you'd want to do a map survey. So inside, you'd be looking at something like CalTopo. There's a shameless plug. So use CalTopo, you find your exact location you want to go through. You can go through the layers, you can go over heat maps, you know, 100-year floodplain, topography, you know, everything.
I love CalTopo. CalTopo's so awesome.
You can get lost on that site. It's freaking nuts. And then obviously, you know, you need eyes on the ground. So you're going into your personal recon. So if somebody actually going out, getting you know, feet in the dirt with measuring line, probing rods, whatever. Keep in mind that whoever is there needs to have a believable reason for being there, right? So if you are a local to the area and you suddenly take up, you know, bird watching or, you know, sports or whatever, you know, is that going to raise any eyebrows? You need to think that stuff through. Or if you're random in the area, you know, hey, why the hell is that guy beating around, you know, the old suburbia? Like, who is he? Was, you know, you have to think all this stuff through because you are inevitably going to be in or around people.
Personal recon is also really important because it gives you boots on the ground experience of, hey, these points that we went over earlier, did they apply? So is it going to be easy to find your landmarks to find this site again? Are there secure routes in and out of the site? Like, how hard is it going to be to find this place? How hard is it going to be? And this is, we're going to bring this up later. How hard is it going to be to retrieve this cache? And not only that, can I get here during rainy season, during winter? Like, does this area get like burned down regularly by
forest fires? Dude, what's your loom at night? Like, am I going to be silhouetted or, you know, where are my sight lines? All that stuff, dude.
Yeah.
Like, you absolutely need, you know, an actual person on the ground. Absolutely essential. But like I said, going into actually finding the site. So you're going to be keeping in mind reference points. So how your reference point could be how you know, relate to the general area. So it's like, all right, it's in this town or it's, you know, after this intersection or whatever, down to the most, you know, the precise point or the final reference point that you'll be using. So it has to be easily identifiable. It needs to stay there. It needs to remain fixed for as long as you're going to use the cache, right? So it can't be something that's, you know, that's transient, that can move. And it has to be near enough to the site that you're actually using in order to pinpoint it using, you know, measurements. So you can't just go 150 yards that way. Like, that doesn't work.
I can't stress this enough. Your reference point has to remain fixed. It cannot just be a broken down car because that car can be repaired and moved. It can't just be a tree because that tree can be cut down, dug up, burned down by a forest fire. It can't be a rock in the middle of a field because that rock could be crushed. It could be moved. It could be buried.
I have the perfect
things example. Change. Go ahead.
Sorry, I was going to say I have the perfect example. So at my church, we have like prayer trails, like meditation trails right behind the church. Mm-hmm. I have a lot of land that you can, you know, do little hikes through. Great little spot. One of our favorite spots, me and my boy, because we hike after church, to go to is an old bridge. You know, it's broken down, so there's like half of it hanging over the creek and the rest of it's gone, right? So we'll go over there, then we'll go and hike in the creek and everything. Went to go there last Sunday after a lot of storms and heavy rainfall. The bridge isn't there anymore.
Oh, it got washed away.
No, it's still there, but you couldn't see it because it's completely underwater. Had like a good 12-foot swell.
And that, my friends, is why I stress, is it going to remain there during rainy season?
Is it going to be there when you show up? Now, imagine if we had a cache under, you know, nestled, you know, nice underneath that bridge.
Under the bridge, yeah.
Unusable, right?
Get your scuba gear.
So, yeah. I mean, and just, and freak stuff, right? Just, it's gone. Yeah. So.
Personal tidbit there. So it's funny too, because like you mentioned that, and I can remember reading a book when I was a lot younger. It was something along the lines of like the Wild West in Texas, and people would get like attacked by bandits or Indians or some kind of natural disaster would happen, and they had valuables on them, so they would bury them and then take reference points, basically like trees or rocks, and they'd be like, come back to this after, you know, I get some help. They come back, they can't find it.
Yeah.
There's hundreds of stories about that stuff.
I will imagine it's like what's gone, what's been taken. Like, who knows?
Right. Who freaking knows?
or another story. So like when I was growing up, we grew up like right on the train tracks. So me and my sisters would walk up and down like miles down the train tracks when we were kids. And me and my cousin would take old railroad ties. We'd jiggle it out of the, or, you know, the nails, and we'd jiggle it out of the ties, and then we would bury them in the rocks. And I can still go there as an adult, walk down and see a little mound of rocks. I can throw the rocks away and there'll be, you know, railroad nails in there. It's completely untouched. You know, it's just
spikes.
Spikes. Fight me. You know what I meant. But
yes.
You know, just saying, like, it's just, you know, it's just kind of funny what will remain versus, you know, what won't. But that to say, railroad's pretty decent area, you know, because if you can, you know, get a good reference point to say, hey, at this railroad crossing at this tie, however many feet over, you know, so you just have to be, you have to use your head, you know, think outside the box, you know, use your imagination with a lot of this stuff, but it needs to be there. It needs to, you know, be permanent. And it has to be unmistakable. Because otherwise, you said, you have hundreds of stories of just like, oh crap, where'd it go?
Yeah. Examples of like what we're talking about. We're talking about bridges. We're talking about dams. We're talking about like mile markers along the highway. We're talking about monuments. We're talking about telephone poles. We're talking about anything that in the infrastructure or man-made, more than likely, still going to be there in about 40 years. That's what we're talking about.
And you're looking for stuff that isn't a high, like a high trafficked area. Yeah, you're looking for stuff that is kind of off the beaten path. So just like kind of forgotten-ish type places.
Which is really hard in today's society with as much as everything's developing and sprawling out.
Yes. Yeah.
All right. Shall we get into the pinpointing techniques?
Yeah, we probably should.
I'm trying to remember what those were.
So basically the idea is that your immediate reference point. So like this is the general area, and your final reference point, like this is the last thing that you're going to get to before you get instructions for where the cache is, should be the same. Right. So the easiest method is to have the cache be directly beside that point, that final reference point.
Right.
So say, hey, it's the 26th rail tie on the right. If I go directly to the right of that rail tie, dig down a foot or two, it'll be there. So you just have to find that point. Like that's the simplest, most ideal way. And then sighting the cache by projection. So you have your final reference point, and then you're using like an azimuth or a coronal direction. You can say, hey, this direction for however long, you know, I keep it within like, you know, 10, 15 meters, right? Keep it close because you're going to have a lot of drift depending on how far you go. Right. You know, at this direction, this distance, that's where it's going to be. Or if you're using multiple reference points, so having them be at an intersection. So, hey, at this reference point, I'm headed north. At this reference point, that's like, you know, 15 meters away, I'm heading east. At that intersection is where it's going to be. So not as precise. There's things you can do to make it more precise, you know, like using azimuth or using reference points that are like long. Or what am I trying to say?
Yeah. So basically what you're trying to say is an example of this would be to use the side of a building. Or thank you. If it has a piece of wood that's straight, you just look down the edge of that piece of wood into the distance, and that's your line that you're going to take.
Exactly
right.
Yes.
And actually, I'm going to nerd out here. One of my favorite games of all time was Assassin's Creed Black Flag. And in that game, there was, I would call it a mini game, where you had to find these little stones so you could get a piece of armor. And the mini game was you climbed up on top of this thing, and you rotated this projection that's on the ground. And what it did was it located two or more reference points on the ground, and then shot lines from them. And at the intersection of those lines is where the stone was buried.
Oh, cool.
So.
That's cool.
Popular culture reference.
Okay. Then moving on to recovery. So recovery, just general equipment that you're going to have for the recovery team. A probing rod. So something, you know, like a, you know, bit of metal or, you know, a thin, thin dowel, something that you can use for burial sites to dig into the ground to feel where the actual cache is. Don't beat it into the ground with a freaking hammer. Don't make it a sharp stick that you can, you know, damage the packaging. But just something that you, so you don't have to dig up a bunch of earth as you're going along, because that's going to leave a trace, obviously.
Yeah, I would honestly recommend a piece of rebar, and the end of it, I would grind down into like a rounded edge. So,
or duct tape or something. Yeah.
Yeah. Enough to where you can penetrate the ground, but not your cache.
Right. Exactly. Shovels, shears, you know, grappling hooks if you're, you know, using submersion.
Yeah.
Things of that nature. So, think also,
I forgot to, I just remembered this. I remember the last time we were going through caches. Two other methods of location after you buried it. GPS.
Right. Yeah, we talked about that.
And that little trick I talked about, driving a metal spike, into the ground right above your cache so that you could locate it with a metal detector.
Yes.
That so those are like two options as well.
That could even be like a tent stake. They just put a little bit of dirt over. Like, doesn't even have to be that big.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you can go to the hardware store and get like one of those big freaking bolts and just shove it straight into the ground. Like that, that's going to get picked up for sure by a metal detector. But who in their right mind is going to be out in the woods with a metal detector looking for your cache? Nobody.
Rats get fat.
Yep. Rats get fat. Pinpoint that sucker with GPS and have your metal detector on you. Could be handheld too. Just saying.
Holy crap, dude. So, like, get a good map off Caltopo, find your 10-digit grid, and then encode that with a one-time pad. Bam.
Bam.
Try to find it. Anyway.
Yeah. Anyway. Recovery. Back to recovery.
Other considerations, and we'll talk about it when we talk about burial sites, but I was going to say, have something of the approximate size of your cache with you, so that you can bury that in its place so there's not a depression when you rebury it.
Yeah.
And so then wherever your site is, I was going to say wherever your site is, just sterilize after you're gone.
Yeah, you don't want it. It shouldn't look like somebody's been there. It shouldn't look like somebody actually purposely moved this dirt and then tamped it down. Because if you're like stomping down the dirt, that does not look natural.
No.
It just doesn't. It needs to look like it's supposed to be there.
Well, and the why, right? So why are we sterilizing this after there? Because people are going to ask questions, right?
Yeah.
So if you are in contested environment, if you are in, you know, enemy environment, they're going to start asking questions, and they're not just going to talk amongst themselves. They're going to be round people up like, hey, the hell's going on? And that caused a lot of problems for you. So best not to have questions asked.
You're not. Which leads us basically don't draw attention to it.
Exactly. Don't draw attention. Which leads us into emplacement. So first and foremost, concealment. It's the quickest, easiest, down dirty way of, you know, getting or emplacing a cache. This looks like so many different things. Right? There are so many ways that you can do this. This could be a camo tarp, you know, over a rucksack that you shoved in a bush. This could look like just hiding something in a cave or behind drywall or, you know, fill in the blank.
Yeah, moving foliage to toss over the top of it.
Right, concealment, all you are doing is you are just obscuring the profile of what you're hiding.
Yep.
This is the least secure, right? So this can be happened upon easily. This could be destroyed. This could, you know, be weathered or whatever. So this isn't a good long-term solution, but if you're trying to decentralize and have a bunch of little caches, that's probably a good way to do it, you know, because it's cheap, it's fast, and you don't need that many people to do it. This could be a one-man job potentially.
Right. And this is exactly what I was talking about earlier when I'm saying, when I was describing like the tactical environment, say, hey, you know, you're going in for recon, but you don't want your entire ruck. You would use this method when leaving your ruck behind.
Right.
The next one would be burial. Burial is way more involved. Obviously, you're going to need some method of digging. So you need more equipment. You need more energy. You need time. Manpower. Ideally, manpower. Ideally, you do this under cover of night.
Mm-hmm.
But conditions are not always ideal. So if you're going to do a burial, make sure you're not seen doing it.
Well, and this has to do with your recon, right? So if you're trying to, you know, dig a burial site in Texas, it depends on where in Texas you are. Because
oh, good freaking luck.
Through shale, you could be digging through clay, you could be digging through who the hell knows, rock. I mean, like, it's luck of the draw.
Yeah.
And it depends on, you know, it depends on so many factors. I mean, hell, dude, like, so soil drainage, you know, what kind of ground cover do you have? Does it have natural concealment? What, you know, are you digging, you know, vertically or horizontally, right? Because that's different stressors on the cache itself and what you're actually able to do. And depending on when you're digging, okay, are you in rainy season? Like we talked about with the bridge.
Oh.
Are you in winter? Because good luck trying to dig through permafrost if you're in some parts of the world. There's a lot that goes into it. Well, then
think about also, suppose you dig that and it's not quite winter, and then you have to retrieve it during winter, and now you're digging through frozen ground.
Well, and potentially snow. Anybody, there's no good way to hide your tracks after ice, snow.
Yeah.
So sterilizing the site's not possible.
Yeah. Even worse yet, you might be in an area during the winter where it just gets cold and rains. And that happens, very likely you could have all of your indicators, all of your reference points washed away.
Right. Yeah. Well, and like you said, so you're preferably digging at night. So you're going to want to leave a marker for the recovery team, potentially. Or if you're finding your spot at night, placing markers so people know where to dig or whatever else. Right. So there's just so many considerations. The hell are you going to do with the shovel when you're done? Like, where are you hiding that?
Well,
I mean, there's so much.
If you're smart, you'll have any tool. Just saying.
And you're
I'm not lugging a full size shovel out there. I'm not lugging a pickaxe.
Depends on how big the freaking cache is, dude.
Fair, but still, it's like I'm not going to want to do that.
Well, yeah, I hate to. I hate digging. It's a lot of work. It's a lot of calories.
In my mind, when I'm talking about caches, I'm talking about going out into the freaking woods, like way out there to cache something. So, of course, you know, I'm thinking about lugging equipment out there. That's not ideal. It's like, what's your terrain look like?
That's what I'm saying, but that depends on what your cache is, right? That depends on what it's for, because it could be medical. It could be radio equipment. It could be clothing. It could be arms and ammunition. It could be just general equipment. You know, what's the stuff? What do you need it for? When do you need it?
Yeah. And I mean, ideally too, especially if you live in an urban environment, kind of like I do, your best bet for cacheing is going to be a storage facility. That could be your cache as well. You're not just going to have your household items there. I also store, you know, my long range bug out stuff there.
Right.
I gotta be able to, I know exactly where it is too. I can open that door and I can find it. I can get to it. But somebody else, it's going to take them a while to find that. Even if they find my cache spot. Right.
But then are you always going to have access to that? You know what
That's
I mean?
True.
Like,
because a lot of these modern storage places, you got to have power because they have automatic gates, they have automatic doors, they have keypads. They have elevators. Do you have stairs? You can always pry open the doors. That's not a big problem. It might be a big problem if there's a keypad that unlocks the system. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of things to take into consideration, especially with the placement. Technically, my stuff's buried under a bunch of crap. But with that being said, our last method of emplacement, this is the least ideal, the absolute least ideal. But yes, also the coolest. Submersion. It's like burying it, but underwater.
It's like burying it in water.
There are so many factors. So
technically difficult to do this well.
It's crazy.
So talk about packaging. You're in, right? It has to be waterproof, obviously.
Has to be.
Right? So waterproof. It has to be able to handle the external pressures of the water, depending on how, you know, what your depth is. Okay. What are you mooring it to? All right. What does the ground look like under it? Is there a current? Is it going to freeze? There's so many freaking buoyancy. Things. Are you in salt water or fresh water? You know, what's your buoyancy? I mean, there's like just math. There's so much math that goes into that. You know what I mean? And like, let's give you the benefit of the doubt. Say you're in the best case scenario, right? You're on your 100 acres of land. You have like, you know, 50 ponds that you use for all your cattle, right? And you're just like, yep, that's the stock I'm, you know, that's the stock take I'm going to use. And, you know, yeah, good for you. But is it worth it? You know, is that your only option? You know, you have to think, what's the, you know, like your, what's your pros and cons for this when you're doing submersion? Because this is such a huge job, not even just in place, but to get it back, right? To recover it is a huge
task. I was going to say that too. These methods, these site selections, this is all going to depend on how fast you need to recover your cache. It's not just about how well it's going to hide it, but how quickly you can retrieve that. Because you can take a cache, get behind drywall, seal that drywall back up, paint over it. No one will know it's there. Like that's, if you're getting someone who's going into a house and tearing up drywall looking for a cache, I got to wonder what you're doing.
Well, at that point, you failed. Like, yeah. They already know to be looking for caches in the walls.
Yeah, you messed up.
You have a terrible leak, and you have a lot of work to do, right?
I actually saw that in a episode of... Oh, my God. I'm trying to think of the name of the show. It was on USA. Dude's name was Michael Weston. Burn Notice. Thank you. That was an episode of Burn Notice. They were trying to find a spy, and she had a hard drive hidden in the wall. And of course, if you don't care about cleanup and you need to bug out, just punch a hole straight through that drywall, grab that thing, and go. But then you have no way of sterilizing the site. But if you're bugging out, you don't care about that.
Well, we talked about that in our Hide and Go Seek Hotel episode.
Correct.
You know, infinite number of places.
Absolutely. But
again, I was just gonna say a little tidbit for submersion, a good place for y'all star would be Pelican cases.
Yep.
Throw that out there.
But you also need to keep in mind buoyancy when it comes to that, because those cases will float. Most cases will float.
So you need adequate weighting. And tying it down and the clearness of the water and
anchoring. Yeah.
Yeah. It is definitely the most technically involved way of caching.
But 100% it is. Absolutely.
That being said, moving probably on the to hardest. Packaging. Yeah. We talked to you about a little bit. Obviously whatever method you're using, whether that be concealment, burial, or submersion, you are trying to protect your stuff from the elements, right? So anything you use, you're going to want it to be, you know, waterproof.
Yep.
Anything, you know, if you're talking about stuff that is going to be just concealed, you have to think about critters or people.
Mm-hmm.
So you probably don't want like a neon orange box holding all your stuff.
So color matters. Yep.
For submersion and burial, you have to think of the external pressures on your packaging, right? So can it structurally handle being buried? Can it structurally handle being under 4 or 5 feet of water? Right.
And being exposed to the elements.
Yeah. Moisture. Moisture is going to freaking kill. Whatever. Yes. And depending on what you're caching, right? So anything metal needs to be protected, needs to be oiled, needs to be not touching other metal, because that's going to rub and that's going to rust. And then when you go to get it in 6 months or a year, you're going to be freaking screwed. So. Yep.
That's one thing the Soviets did right when they were storing their AKs for long periods of time.
For decades.
They put them in packaging and just drowned those things in oil.
But dude, right as rain. Rip them out of the box. Yes,
it comes out of the packaging, wipe that thing down, round it in the chamber, and it fires. Guaranteed, every time. Crazy. I love it.
I would say, so packaging, that is a big consideration. So whether that's ammunition, whether that's firearms 100%. Or firearm parts, anything that's metal, oil the crap out of it. Don't let it touch with the metal. And
I mean, if you can get away with it,
oxygen packs. You throw the oxygen packs.
Oxygen packs. Vacuum seal it. All that.
Yeah. Everything. Because my thing is, if you're at the point to where you're caching stuff, go ahead. You know, go extra.
Yes. You know? Better safe than sorry. 100%.
Like oil, individual pieces, saran wrap, individual pieces, throw them in there with padding and, you know, weatherproof the box and then freaking saran wrap that too. Yep. Like,
yep.
Go extra. Go cartel on this.
Waterproof.
Crap, you know, yes. Like.
Oh my God.
The thing is, yeah. If you're, you know, the whole basis of the cache, right, is that you are putting stuff away securely so you can use it later. If you're digging up this cache, you need to be able to use it. So put in the work on the front end and the back end so that when you actually go to dig the stuff up, you can actually use it. It's not a second oh crap moment.
Yep. There's no amount of preparation is going to save you if you go to dig that stuff up to use it and it's destroyed.
Yep.
Then you just wasted time and energy and probably money too. So.
Right. But also, you know, you joked about at the beginning, keep track of your stuff, right? Keep track of your caches, because if you can't find it, it's not useful. But also, have a good stock, whether that's mental, if you want to be absolutely secure, or encoded. But, you know, what stuff is perishable? You know, do you have food stuff, water stuff? Do you have medical supplies? Things that are perishable need to be rotated.
Yep.
That needs to be checked up on, right?
Yep.
So, you know, if you have radio or other electronic equipment, you'll throw that crap in a Faraday cage whenever you cache it. You know, just little things.
Mm-hmm. Temperature. God, we didn't talk about this. Temperature is a big thing too. Because if you cache some, like, I don't know, radio batteries. So under normal circumstances, yes, they will slowly lose their charge, even if they're not being used. But if you cache those things in a cold environment, there's a very good chance they're going to be dead by the time you go to use them.
Yep.
Because cold weather nukes batteries very quickly. People who own Teslas up in cold areas found that out very quick this past winter. You see stories all over the place of dead Teslas or Teslas at the charging ports who can't charge their cars because they're just toast. The batteries are done. They can't handle the cold weather. And now a word from our sponsors. This podcast is sponsored by Blackbeard Firestarter. Blackbeard Firestarter has been our first choice in Firestarter since they introduced their Firestarter rope years ago.
Blackbeard offers their Firestarters, their fire plugs, arc lighters, ferro rods, stormproof matches, everything you need to get a fire started.
Their products are made right here in the U.S. Wind and waterproof, have an insane burn time. They're basically dummy proof.
And to help you out, Blackbeard let us cherry pick from their store everything that we want, everything that we thought you needed to get a fire started, and we call it our Hard Time Strong Men Fire Kit. On top of that, they're also offering a 15% discount on anything in their store when you enter code STRONGMEN at checkout.
We can't recommend Blackbeard enough. They stand behind their products, and so do we.
Be sure to check them out at blackbeardfire.com and on Instagram at blackbeardfire. And as always, stay in the fight.
Stay in the fight. And now a word from our newest sponsor, Granite Rifle Group. Granite Rifle Group is a precision rifle company owned and operated by a USMC veteran. You've probably heard him on our show.
Granite offers turnkey rifle solutions built around your field use, with plug-and-play upgrades available to tailor your rifle for your specific needs. GRG offers simple rifle kits or complete custom builds available to suit every need, from the weekend target shooter or hunter to the long-range precision rifleman.
Granite Rifle Group is all about putting high-quality precision rifles into the hands of Americans to extend the reach of the American rifleman. And when you use the code STRONGMEN at checkout, you'll get 6.9% off your order. Nice.
Nice. Check them out at graniterifelgroup.com or find them on Instagram at granite_rifle_group_LLC. And as always, stay in the fight.
Stay in the fight.
And quickly, I wanted to run through the 12-point cache report. So we'll throw this up in the show notes on the Patreon. But the 12-point cache report consists of 1, the type of cache; 2, the method of caching; 3, its contents; 4, description of containers; 5, general area; 6, immediate area; 7, cache location; 8, emplacement details; 8A, burial; B, concealment; C, submersion; 9, operational data and remarks; 10, dates of emplacement and duration of the cache; 11, sketches and diagrams; and 12, radio message for recovery. So, like I said, that's a lot just to throw at you guys, but we'll throw that in the show notes. But that is the report that, you know, you should be, you know, thinking of. So if you're not much in a as much in an operational context, you don't have to do that. If you're, you know, working with other people, it's good to have that or something like that. Have a system for, you know, reporting these things and for just keeping track of, you know, keeping track of your stuff. You know, the organizational part of it is, you know, obviously very important.
One practical application that is still making the rounds even today, I've heard about this thing for years now. So thank you from one of our patrons, Sven, for this, but he mentioned geocaching. Geocaching is damn near is what?
I said I'm guilty.
Oh, you've done it?
Yeah. It's a lot of fun. Nah.
Okay. I mean, I believe you. I've seen videos of people doing this, but geocaching is the near perfect way to practice emplacement of caches. Or, you know, the recovery of them. Geocaching uses an app. You can get it on your phone, and it'll connect you to basically the world's largest treasure hunt.
Yeah, so and I've got my phone.
Crazy.
There's videos on YouTube you can watch. There's, you know, on Instagram, whatever your social media tastes. But it is just this worldwide game. So you get on your phone. It's free to use, but it, you know, obviously takes in your GPS location, and it pinpoints around you different geocache locations approximately. So you drive or walk to whatever area that you see a geocache is in, and the person who emplaced the cache gives you directions. And you have to follow those directions, and they could be simple, they can be complex, you know, whatever. I've seen some that have like puzzles and other crap in it. But you follow the directions and you'll find the cache. Inside the cache, you can write your name, say you found it, and then you get credit for it on the app or whatever. People leave notes or, you know, trinkets for other people. But I think that it's the perfect practice for this, because you can both place caches for people to find, or you can just go around finding stuff, and it is everywhere. So
it's also a great way to practice your land nav.
Yes, exactly. But I just thought it was, you know, kind of kicked myself that I didn't think about it, but you know, like you said, Sven, thanks a lot for shouting that out, man. But it's just the coolest way to practice this skill, right? Because you know, this, whatever cache is in your area, could be placed from someone that's on the complete other side of the world who came to visit. I mean, you have no idea who these people are, and you're relying on their directions to find the cache, which is normally about the size of a freaking pill bottle. So, I don't know. I thought it was really neat, and it gives you a lot of, you know, practice in a way that isn't going to raise any eyebrows if you're out doing it in public, because, you know, anyone is weird and asks what you're doing. Oh, I'm geocaching. And that's exactly what you're doing. But yeah, great practice gives you, you know, both sides of it. And yeah, just wanted to share that with you guys. Well, did you have anything else for caching?
So yeah, final word from me. Don't be like Hammy the squirrel in Over the Hedge. Don't forget where you buried your nuts. Otherwise, you find it and you can just pull a Hammy and say, look, guys, I found my nuts. Sorry, I had to. I love that movie.
But you should always have accountability of your nuts. That's obvious.
Know where your nuts are at all times. You don't want to crush your nuts.
Looking at you, IRA. Guys, we are the Hard Time Strongman podcast, training up a bear class of man.
Time to get shot today.
It'll be worth it. Stay in the fight.
Stay in the fight. Check out our Discord, where we talk about all of the topics that we talk about in our conversations, but in deep dive format. We have a lot of members on there of varying skill sets, of varying proficiencies, all talking about all these topics, sharing their experiences. So join today and help us expand our knowledge base.
And check out our Patreon. Our Patreon, outside of just backing up all of our episodes for when we eventually get canceled, our patrons get access to our exclusive episodes, our pre-shows, our post-shows, our little tidbits here and there that we aren't really supposed to talk about. We're also opening up all of these exclusive episodes for people to individually purchase. So you don't have to get tied into a tier in order to get all that content. You can dip your toes in a little bit, decide you like it, then come and join us on that. We're having exclusive conversations, and along with the Discord, we are just building that community, building that skill set, that mastery, these proficiencies. And this, outside of our sponsor, is what's keeping the lights on and keeping all of this information, all these classes rolling for you guys. So make sure to check our Patreon. And one last thing, guys, the world is better with you in it. If you're feeling suicidal or if you're in crisis, dial 988 or reach out at 988lifeline.org to get help. Someone's always on the line. So if you need a lifeline, remember 988. Stay in the fight.
Stay in the fight.